It is James Stephen Patterson versus Commonwealth, the last case for the day. We'll be here tomorrow as well. But Mr. Hayden, as you know, you have each side has 15 minutes to argue. Would you like to reserve a portion for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
All right. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Your Honor, James Stephen Patterson was convicted in a bench trial in the York County Circuit Court of one count of driving under the influence, third offense of driving under the influence. We've assigned as error that that there was insufficient evidence of the California of his having been convicted of a similar offense of DUI under the California statute. There was Exhibit 4, apparently the judge ruled that was clearly inadequate from California, and he didn't consider that. But he did accept the document number 3 as being an adequate proof of a DUI conviction in California. We would just note that if you look at page 129, that's the document that was relied upon by the judge that's supposed to prove a conviction. You look at that, it says that the defendant the defendant was not present at this hearing date that's referenced on the thing, November 7th, 2008. He's not present, yet apparently the trial was conducted. It says they have a box check that says the defendant request to withdraw a previous plea of not guilty and enter a plea of guilty to a charge of count 3, which was the
California. He did have counsel present, even though.
Yes, he had counsel present, but it certainly in Virginia, if you're not going to have the defendant present, you have to have some proof that we've set aside the possibility
of
conviction.
Of
jail time, and that wasn't present here. If we look at this document that we have, it's not signed anywhere by a judge on this. The one page that actually refers to the date of what the judge what is supposed to have happened, it says that the defendant has requested to enter a plea of guilty to this DUI charge, but it doesn't say the judge accepts the plea of guilty and finds him guilty of the charge of DUI or whether it's some lesser offense. It doesn't say that it's not signed by a judge anywhere. If you look further, you look at the page.
Are you asserting, though, that we should read separately the first part of what you're indicating as Exhibit 3 from the other part that talks about the jail department that is signed by the?
Well, if we look at the accompanying documents on page 131, 132, 133, that's the information. That's the charging. That's what he was charged with.
Right, but then it goes through essentially what looks almost like a colloquy that we're accustomed to mm-hmm. in Virginia courts where it's signed by the court. So it appears that this has to be read all together. Would that be incorrect?
It certainly we need to look at what was admitted into evidence, but if you actually look at what it says, I would respectfully submit it doesn't show that he was convicted of a DUI offense under the California statute. If you look at pages, you have the information. That's just what the charge is. It's not a conviction order. That runs from pages 131 through 133. Then you have pages 134 through 136 is the advisement of rights form, where it is a colloquy. Interestingly, the date on that is signed is not the date of the trial. It's a date of October 5th, 15th of 2008. The trial is on November 7th, right? And so you see that the defendant's been advised of his rights. He acknowledges he's been advised, but it's not a conviction order. And we notice in those three pages, we have page one of four pages, page two of four pages, page three of four pages.
Mr. Hayden, then what do we do with the other part of? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, it seems like you're picking parts out as opposed to the fact that it appears we probably would have to read this collectively, because it appears also that if you continue on, that there's also an indication where the court seems to find him guilty, where it indicates that there's a finding of guilt.
Well, it certainly is disturbing that you have this document says page one of four pages, two of four pages, three of four pages, but no page four of four pages. That's just missing. And then we have this final page that doesn't indicate it's page four, doesn't indicate, and it's an entirely separate date from what's on the first three pages. We don't even know that it pertains to the advisement of rights form. But there's something there that says the judge, a judge is supposed to be a judge on the original, the first page 129 says a judge Raimondo Cota, but I can't tell that that's who signs on November 7th, 2008, but it does say there to this, it says the judge accepts the defendant's plea and is convicted on his or her plea signed by this judge. It doesn't say what he's convicted of. It's signed by the attorney on this. But again, we don't know if this is something that pertains to the original the conviction order or if it pertains to the advisement of rights. And so
Mr. Hayden, where it says the defendant has pled guilty to the plea, and it says about count two VC, and it talks about subsection A of the code while having an alcohol limit of 0.08 or higher.
As the defense counsel noted in making his motion of trial, he said it doesn't say the judge accepted the plea. For all we know, the judge could have refused the plea and dismissed the charge. Or under a very common disposition, as I noted in the footnote under the in my brief, that the most common disposition is to reduce to a lesser offense under the California Code of wet reckless. They have dry reckless driving and wet reckless driving, which is presumably reckless driving that somehow involves the use of alcohol. Some very different from not substantially similar to the Virginia law. And so we don't know precisely what the judge did with the plea, whether he found him guilty of the this offense or some lesser offense, some lesser include. We don't know. We have to speculate. Now, that's just the problem.
But looking at the two statutes, Mr. Hayden, aren't they almost exactly the same? 0.08. Virginia does say motor vehicle. California says vehicle, right?
Yes.
And, is there any indication here that he was in California? Does the record indicate that he was driving maybe a moped or something when he was convicted, or does it just...
We don't know what he was driving in California, and that's a thing that I note that it was cited in the Lowe case that I cite in my brief that involved that was noted in the Lowe case, which involved a Maryland DUI statute and a Virginia DUI statute. They noted that it could be of legal significance that Maryland speaks of driving a vehicle, Virginia speaks of driving a motor vehicle, and they said that could be a significant difference there. But and lo, they said, we know from the other facts that were adduced concerning the Maryland conviction, we were able to tell from the record it did, in fact, involve a motor vehicle, and therefore we don't worry about the fact that there is this difference in the statute, because we know from the facts we know about the Maryland conviction it did involve. But we don't know that in this case.
We can see that, at least on the face of the two statutes, that there is similarity, and while they don't have to be exact, there is similarity between the two statutes, one involving, both of them involving either driving under the influence of drugs or or alcohol, and the other one having a blood alcohol limit of 0.08 or greater. So that would arguably be the starting point.
Your Honor, I would just note the Chenault case that says proving substantial similarity between two states' laws requires more than a showing of general likeness. Both these statutes pertain to DUIs, but there are substantial differences, such as the existence of lesser-included offenses of the wet reckless, and such as the rebuttable presumption that's stated under the California Code. That's in Virginia, they talk about how well we have a permissive inference that's set forth in 269. That's not actually in the 266 statute, but. That's certainly a difference. We have the circumstance that the difference between how a vehicle is defined in California is if it's a self-propelled vehicle, it can be convicted. Under the California statute, but in Virginia they define a vehicle as something that either carries a person or carries something, transports something. And so I was thinking, my Honda self-propelled motor, it would qualify as a vehicle under, if it's self-propelled, it's got a thing where it kind of runs by itself, if I'm walking along with that thing on the road, and I've been having a beer before, conceivably I could get convicted under the California statute, but under Virginia statute, there has to be shown that it's capable of carrying a person or transporting something, so I guess it wouldn't qualify as a vehicle, motor vehicle under the Virginia statute. So that's a difference. And there are other differences that were noted. I think I'm already into my time. I'm going to rest at this point.
I should have reminded you, but that's okay.
Thank you.
Reserve, and we'll see you in a moment. Mr. Forster? Does the record indicate anything what was being driven in California?
Not that I'm aware of. There's nothing in the record, Your Honors, that would say what specifically was being driven in California. However, the trial court did note that the car that he was pulled over in and was found to be driving in Virginia at the time was registered in California, which is where the prior DUI convictions were from.
Well, counsel, let's talk about substantial similarity in reference to the two statutes. If, in fact, they're similar on the face, that's not where we stop. We also look at whether there is behavior that would be something that could be convicted under Virginia statute, the Virginia DUI statute. Mm-hmm. Judge Beals has asked you about the difference about whether the record indicates what the appellant was driving. Virginia does make a distinction about motor vehicle for purposes of DUI. For purposes of DUI, you can drive a moped and be convicted as long as you're on the public highway, but you can't be on private property and be convicted. What is the significance of that? Because in California, you could be. You can be convicted on private property driving a moped, but that's not something that's punishable under our DUI laws.
Well, Your Honor, what I would point to is the case law that was cited on brief, and that would be the Clemente versus Commonwealth case and the Taylor versus Commonwealth case. I believe the precise issue discussing this moped in California in comparison to Virginia's DUI statute, and I do recognize in that case there was facts that were elicited that he was driving the vehicle in that particular instance as well as driving a vehicle in Virginia.
Well, let me stop you because in Clemente, one of my esteemed colleagues who happens to be on the panel wrote that case, but in fact, there was a very specific difference noted as to why one of the California, or two of the convictions actually did qualify as prior convictions under 18.2.270. It was because of the fact that the behavior, it was clear the person was driving a car. In fact, distinguished the fact that the other two could not be included because of that very factor. So how does Clemente actually support your position when the record doesn't indicate what he was driving, what the appellant was driving in California for those DUIs?
Well, I would argue that it cuts both ways. We don't know what he was driving. We don't know what he wasn't driving.
But isn't that the Commonwealth's burden?
Well, yes, I would agree that it is the Commonwealth's burden, but I would take that and I would say that in Clementi, the proposition was whether or not California statute under 231.52a was similar. And the court said they are both substantially similar, core characteristic prohibition of drunk driving. Now, I would buttress that with the Taylor versus Commonwealth case, which is under the same exact California statute that we're under right now. And the court went through and specifically articulated three specific reasons why they are substantially similar. And I would say we can rely on those three specific findings, which is they both employ rebuttable presumptions based on BAC results. It says that neither Virginia nor California are the BAC presumptions mandatory or conclusive.
But Taylor respectfully is not really looking at what seems to be the key issue here, which is whether it's a motor vehicle under the DUI provisions of California, or excuse me, of Virginia. It's actually talking more about the presumptions. So isn't that distinguishable
in terms
of supporting your argument?
I would agree that it is distinguishable and it does support the argument, but then I would also deflect back to the assignment of error, and that we're talking about the admissibility of these, and when then we're talking about the authentication of these, and I'm not certain that what we're now discussing was either put forward or was argued below or is even before the court. I mean, I do agree that they have talked about the statutes, but again, we're getting back to...
Well, they argue several things. They argue that they're not substantially similar, okay. And then when there's the motion to strike and the motion in reference to the further admissibility of it, it talks about the admissible elements.
Yes, Your Honor, and I guess I would just touch, I mean, going back to the argument below was the moped hypothetical, and I know that was in the brief discussed, and I would argue that here we have a motor vehicle DUI conviction from Newport News, and I should say, getting back to this particular prior DUI conviction, here we have the documents, they're authenticated through the court. We do not have that specific factor. I can't say what was driven in California. And if I would, again, go back to the Taylor case, which I know does not talk about that, but that would be the Commonwealth's position, is that this court has found in repeated cases that they are substantially similar. And, again, that's the Commonwealth's position. I don't know that I have...
That the California statute is, or just in other... similar statutes in other states are substantially similar.
No, specifically 231.52b, again, relying on Taylor versus Commonwealth, specifically made the finding that it was substantially similar. And I realize that when we go to the Clementi case, we're talking about provision A, and there was the discussion is the difference between the vehicle and motor vehicle definitions and whether or not you could be found guilty of that crime in Virginia, which you could be, or in California, and there was that distinction. And the court said that was just not substantial enough to get around the substantially similar requirement. I would say it was a very well-drafted opinion.
That's a very wise comment, I would say.
I'm very happy to see that. I would say that, the position of the Commonwealth is that all the pages, again, they're authenticated, they were admissible because they were relevant, and that the California statute is substantially similar, as has been found by this court on multiple occasions, and I would like to move to the second argument.
All right, well, counsel, I do have one question for you in reference to that. If this court does not agree that they're substantially similar, obviously one of the options that would occur is that we would be dealing with the DUI second. Would the Commonwealth consent to resentencing on the DUI second?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And again, I would just moving to the second argument put forth by opposing counsel as far as the sufficiency of the evidence. When we look to the first DUI conviction from Newport News, we have James Stephen Patterson is listed as the name of the defendant. His date of birth is July 1st, 1973, which is the same date of birth and the same name as the defendant in this particular case. Again, it states he violated 18.2.266. He was represented by counsel. There's a statement that he pleads guilty to operating a motor vehicle with a 0.8% BAC or higher. The plea is voluntary and intelligent. And then we have a judge that signed the order below the paragraph saying, I accept the voluntary plea, so on and so forth. And as the trial court noted, there was no question as to that prior DUI conviction. We then moved to Exhibit Number 3, which I realize is at issue with respect to whether or not it's substantially similar. But assuming the court agrees with me, or the Commonwealth, Again, we look to the contents of that document. And to your question, opposing counsel, yes, you have to consider these documents as a group. We can't parse out one word from this and one sentence from that. We look at it as a group of documents. We have the charging instrument, which has the same case name as the plea agreement, as we move to page 134. We move from the plea agreement to the signature of the defendant himself, Mr. Patterson, and then the last page shows the signature of his counsel as well as the judge. When we look to all of that, we then look to the information. Again, it says the name of the court. It has the same name. Again, it does not spell out his middle name, but James S. Patterson is the same, similar. I didn't know it should be the same person as James Patterson. This particular instance, the same birth date, and again, as the Commonwealth noted on brief, there's a presumption with identity that they are the same person. And in this particular case, there's nothing in the record that would suggest that there was another 50 James S. Pattersons with the same birth date in that location that could potentially be somebody else. So I would say, again, the evidence was sufficient to establish he had two prior DUI convictions, that this was the third or subsequent conviction, and the Commonwealth would ask the court to affirm.
Can I ask you, Mr. Hayden made the point about Mr. Patterson signed on 10-15-08, and that then we go to the judge's signature. The attorney signed also on November 7th, 08, but then the judge signed the order on November 7th, 2008. Is it significant in any way that it indicates the defendant wasn't present or that he signed the acknowledgement in October?
Commonwealth would argue that it's not significant. He, on the information page, he says he's not been represented by counsel. There's nothing to say that he wasn't provided this. He went over it with counsel, signed it, and as you'll see, it was filed on the same day that it was signed by the judge and by his attorney. And I would not attribute very much significance to that at all. I mean, he's initialed everything. He signed it. He was represented by counsel. Counsel signed it as well. And for that reason, I'd argue and ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Forster. Mr. Hayden, you have your rebuttal time.
Your Honor, I would just note that the Taylor and Clemente cases raised very narrow issues about where he said that this aspect of Virginia law is different from the California law. The Court of Appeals in those cases said that those narrow aspects that were challenged were that they didn't feel was significantly different. And so, but they were not saying making a flat-out ruling the California statute is substantially similar in all ways. This is the first case to actually go into these details of the other aspects of the statute that do differ but weren't raised in those cases. And that's why those cases aren't binding on this court. I would submit the case that's binding or that ought to be the controlling in this case is the Cox case that's cited in the brief. And that case, this court held that a West Virginia DUI ordinance was substantially broader than the related Virginia statute, encompassing additional offenses, and thus was not substantially conforming. Because the defendant could have been convicted under the other state statute of behavior that would not have been a crime in Virginia, the other statute was not substantially similar. Well, in this case, we have the Virginia California statutes are dissimilar because California's use of the term vehicle allows convictions for conduct not punishable under 18-266, which specifies motor vehicles as separately defined from vehicle in both states. And thus, an individual could be convicted of drunk driving in California while driving a moped on private property. We don't know the circumstances.
Let me ask you a question. Let's assume or suppose that we agreed with you. Would the appellant then consent to resentencing on a DUI second?
I would think we'd have to agree that would be correct, that the offense ought to be what they proved was he had a second offense DUI. We weren't challenging the Newport News DUI conviction. I would just note that there were the other differences in the statute, the way they measured the blood alcohol content. You know, California just said the weight of the alcohol.
Respectfully, in terms of your brief, you didn't raise issues about the presumption or the testing of alcohol. You the issue raised was in reference to the substantial similarity regarding vehicle versus motor vehicle.
Right. Well, that's correct. But there, throughout the thing, Mr. LeMobin did, I thought, a fantastic job of walking through the statute, the California statute, noting differences between the California statute and the Virginia statute, such as, well, in Virginia, you have to be tested within 3 hours after after arrest, but California, it's you have to be tested within 3 hours after driving, period. And so and that's a much shorter time frame under the California statute than under the Virginia statute. It might be that, you know, it's 4 hours before the officer arrives on the scene, makes an arrest, and then within 3 hours there, then Virginia gets tested. So that's a difference there. The way that they actually...
Mr. Hayden, I hate to let you go over a little bit. Do you want to wrap up very briefly for us?
Well, I think I'll rely on the brief for the remainder of my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden. We will greet counsel, and then this court will be in recess until 9 o'clock.